Blog Talk Radio.
All right, we're live, folks. This is Ramble Around and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, it's the tornado, 10 to 10 cow.
We're just waiting on the psychic, our in-house psychic, Tom Padgett.
Rich, I'm going to get into this a little bit later, but I'm really getting tired of having to do tributes and obituaries almost every week on our show anymore.
I know, right, Carmen? Carmen, the farmer, Basilio.
And what was almost ironic was last week, I'm pretty sure he died yesterday, the 7th, I'm pretty sure, which was a year to the day that Joe Frazier passed away. And last week when we had the rains and the hurricane, and I was proactively taking some of the stuff out of my basement so I didn't have to do it while a flood was going on if I did get flooded. And my autographed picture of Carmen DeFilio is almost right next to my autographed T-shirt of Smokin' Joe Frazier. And when I grabbed them, literally, one was in the left hand and one was in the right hand. It's a crazy, you know, coincidence, you know?
Oh.
Hello, you still there?
Basilio is one of the greats, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you go back and you look at some of his classic wars. I mean, this guy fought, like, the who's who in like, the 1950s and in the early 60s. He saved the man, fought the great Sugar Ray Robinson, beat the great Sugar Ray Robinson. You know, he fought guys like Tony DeMarco, who we just saw last month up in Brock and Mack. The Gene Fulmer. I mean, just a little Johnny Saxon, just a bunch of great fighters out there. And if you go back to his second fight with Sugar Ray Robinson, Robinson caught him with a punch early in the fight, and Basilio's eyes swelled up almost immediately. This is like in the fourth or fifth round. And these were 15-round fights back in the day. And, you know, that's a fight that today, fight's over. Stop, done. But even back then, you know, a lesser fighter with 10-plus rounds to go would have said, you know what, I want to save myself for a better day. But that was not Carmen DeFilio. And Carmen DeFilio went a full 15 rounds competitively with one eye against possibly the greatest fighter that ever walked the face of the earth.
Right.
I mean, that says it all right there.
And we had Tony DeMarco on the show.
Yeah.
About meetings with Basilio.
We had him on shortly after we started getting stuff going with the Marciano Foundation, didn't we? Remember, we had a lot of those guys on this in succession.
Yeah, he's those fights.
And you know what else, Rich, I was just thinking of? The November 7th, last year. Wasn't that the same day that we lost Iron Mike Pizzitari?
It was close.
I think it was the same day we lost Joe Frazier. Because that week we did a tribute show to both of them. And I remember Iron Mike, we tried a couple times to get him on the show and we were never able to connect with him. And then I got an email that, like, when he passed away, someone to send him to you or calling you and leaving you a message.
Yeah, boxing is losing its best representatives lately. I don't know.
Actually, KO Digest, who's one of my Facebook friends that I often, you know, collaborate with and talk to, and, you know, we just... I like really talking to people on Facebook and boxing. That's why I stopped going into public chat rooms. Because public chat rooms, you know, anytime you get a major fight, you get a Mayweather fight, you get a Pacquiao fight, even if you had, like a decent HBO fight, you know, you get these rooms that were flooded on there, and granted, sometimes you would get knowledgeable people. That's how I first, you know, got talking to Iceman John Scully, was in a boxing chat room. But then you just get these idiots on there that, you know, don't know, you know, a left hook, you know, from their asshole. And, yeah, so I couldn't think of anything else, so I pulled that one out.
That's all right.
But that's why I always go on this KO Dodgers page, because we get some morons on there, but for the most part, they filter out. Like, if somebody's on there always being disrespectful, they kick them out. They defriend them. So I go on there, and I like talking to knowledgeable boxing people. And one of the things we were talking about today was some of the all-time great fighters with recuperative powers. You know, guys like the Yoshiro Gotti's of the world, the Carmen DeFillias of the world, the Rocky Marcianos, the Muhammad Ali's, the Larry Holmes, Jesus Christ. The guy up until the fight with Tyson and holding him down like twice in his career. And those are two punches that probably would have knocked out a moose, one from Ernie Shavers and one from all those Knight. And he got up from both of them, and God knows how he survived. He was stumbling all over the place. But we were just, you know, talking about that. And the one thing KO Dodgers just marked today was great boxing people that we've lost just this year alone. And pretty much we still got 7 weeks to go in the year. But we've lost, you know, Goody Petronelli, Angelo Dundee, Emmanuel Stewart, Carmen DeFilio. I mean, right there, that's four huge names right there. I'll have, you know, one, if I remember right off the top of my head. And not counting.
But, we still have the boxing Rain Man.
Hey, don't drink me now. I'm trying to stay alive, you know?
Stay alive. All right. Well, we have Joey Rivera from The Ultimate Fighter on a little later tonight. We also have Mark from Massachusetts. He's going to tell us a little bit about this wrestling benefit that he's got going on there. He's going to... Now, okay, so we're back.
You were doing that, I pulled up that list that we were talking about from KO Digest. And if anybody out there is on Facebook, I'm not sure if they can accept any more friends. But look them up. Look them up on my page. It's called KO Digest. It has a picture of Hadler and Hearns on there. And the people that man this page are based out of Brockton, Mass. So... you know, of course, we're always talking Marciano and a Hagler on there. I sent them my video from the Marciano statue on there. But here's a look at the Penn fighters with great recuperative power. It's a great, lift. One always subject to, debate and discussion. So as we go, we have Muhammad Ali, Arturo Gatti, Larry Holmes, Evander Holyfield, Rocky Marciano, Matthew Saad Mohamed, Aaron Pryor, Sugar Ray Leonard, Juan Manuel Marquez. And I'd like to mention Matthew Saad Mohamed on here, who was a Philadelphia player out of the late 70s and in the early 80s. Late in his career, he was trying to hold on to make a few more paydays. He fought up into the early 90s, but he really didn't have anything left. One of the funny stories I remember out of him, you know, his title reign was, I think he won the title around like 78, 79. So I was, you know, a couple of years old. Well, it happened to be that one of the trainers that him used to be one of Saad's cornermen back in the champ. And his second fight was Yapi Lopez. And if you get a chance, find it on YouTube, or even if you can find it at the flyer. Matthew Saad Mohamed versus Yaki Lopez, too, for the light heavyweight championship of the world. And Lopez is a tough Mexican fighter. You know, he's fighting Saad Mohamed. And I think he's on the eighth round. He gets Mohamed on the ropes. And he's hitting him with everything, including the 15th. He can't put him down. And the referee if it was a fight today, probably would have been stopped, you know, from the unanswered punches he was nailing him with. But the bell ring saved him. And remember this trainer of mine, Reverend Thompson, Rev always told me that when Saad sat down in the corner, his eyes were out of it, and like you could tell, the man was literally unconscious sitting on that stool. And within 60 seconds, they said he almost shook his head, began to drink water, and his eyes turned back on, like the lights turned back on. And it was like he was 100% recuperated, and he was ready to go. And that was, you know, a cool story. And it always kind of reminds me of the time I fought Brian Kerr out in Reno when I hit him with a big left hook. And his eyes rolled back, and I was walking away like, this fight's over. Because he was on his way down. I don't know how he caught himself to stay up. But as I was going back to what I thought finish him off, he looked at me and he shook his head, and his eyes turned back on. I said, what the hell? You know? But, yeah, that's a fighter with great recuperative powers. But a lot of great fighters on that list. I mean, you think a guy like Juan Manuel Marquez down against Pacquiao three times in the first round of their first fight and has fought him on even terms for the next 35 rounds, pretty much. You know, Sugar Ray Leonard, some of the fights, you know, that he had, especially later in his career, his reflexes were going a little bit. Vander Holyfield, who can forget his fights with, you know, Bert Cooper, Whitfield.
So Holyfield filed a lawsuit this week to make sure that 20 items, I think, from an auction bill go forward at the end of November. He's got no money for a child support, but he can afford some lawyers to sell his memorabilia. But anyway, I want to introduce Psychic Tom. We got Psychic Tom finally with us. Can you hear us now, Tom?
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening. Hey, I missed the first few minutes. I missed the first few minutes, but I hope that famous response from Carmen Basilio was brought up. Do you remember when it was before the rematch with Robinson? It was that day, and he was interviewed by Howard Cosell. And my memory serves me right. Cosell comes on, Carmen, 15 spots. Writers have predicted that Robinson's going to regain the title tonight. What do you say to that? He says, 15 of them are wrong. Now, that's a man's man. I just want that quote everywhere. That is confidence. And that's the best way I can describe him. What a legend. Yeah, he didn't waste words. He just got the job done.
Tom, one of the things I said before we got you on the air is I told Rich, I said, Rich, I'm really getting tired of coming on the air every week and having to do a tribute and almost a eulogy for, you know, another great one that we lose. Uh-huh. And I said, man, 2012 has really been a tough year on us so far. And
oh, yeah.
One Facebook friend, page I'm friends with, they listed some of the people that we've lost so far this year. And the Giddy Petronelli, Angela Dundee, Major.
Skipped out a little on us, Tony. Can you hear us now?
I was saying some of the names that we lost this year, and I said it was a year to the day that we lost Joe Frazier.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, shifting gears a little, I was going to ask when we introduced Tom, right before we got disconnected the first time. Let's get the Psychic Tom prediction on Rich Franklin versus Kung Tung Lee. What do you think is going to happen there, Tom?
Well, let me get the crystal ball out on that one. This is a tough one, as they all are. You know, great marketing, because the old cliche about styles making fights, that Kung Lee has a very difficult style to practice against. I mean, if you're training for this guy, where do you get your training partners at? Or your sparring partners? You know, who do you bring in? And he's one of the few guys that has been able to take these fancy taekwondo, you know, spin kicks and high kicks, stuff that I thought we'd see more of in the early UFCs, and none of them worked back then, so everyone quit doing them, but Kung Lee is somehow able to make them work. So I think on the feet, and Franklin style's a little unorthodox on the feet too. So I think that if we stay there, Kung Lee may have a slight edge. However, I know that I'm sure he's been working on his ground game, but I like Franklin on the ground. So I'm going to go with Rich, getting him off his feet and winning it on the ground.
Now, Kung Lee has a very, very deceiving record. I think just makes you think he's got a lot less experience than Rich Franklin. He's 29-6, but he came along his time in MMA where there was really nothing but big time names for him to fight. So Kung Lee has fought a lot of tough guys, mostly in Strikeforce there, but you know, just totally dismantled Frank Shamrock. Granted, he was at the tail end of his career, but so is Rich Franklin. So, you know, you never know what to happen in this one. I like Kung Lee as a person, as a fighter, but I think Rich Franklin just has way too much experience to fall to a guy like that.
Yeah, I just think Rich has a few more tools, in the toolbox, and he may need them. Having said that, though, I think it would be a mistake for him to keep it standing. Not that Rich's stand-up isn't good. I don't mean it like that. I mean, he's proven he's knocked out from Chuck Liddell on down. But I just feel that that's his edge on the ground, and I think that's what he'll do.
This one's from Macau, China. So it's the first time ever in China, I think, we've had a UFC event. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. It's kind of an interesting connection because in my research with the Fertitta brothers, they were in business with a company who was skimming from casinos over in Macau. So kind of a territory they're familiar with. In that respect. And I know that from just poking around just on regular general news about that area, they have a huge counterfeiting problem over there. They call it the Super Bill. The US 100 get counterfeited like crazy over there. The casinos, they had to share it down for months at a time at one point because of it. So kind of an interesting little talk about Romney and manipulating currency. I do it with American dollars over there too. But anyway, we have a huge card there in Macau. We got Thiago Silva back in action. He's 14-3, fighting Stanislav Nedkov, who I've never seen fight, but he's 12-0. And we have the other Thiago, Paulo Thiago, 14-4, fighting the stun gun, 15-2-1, Dong-Yun Kim. That should be a good fight. And I guess they're having more than one Japanese fighter on this one. We got Takanori Gomi, too, who's 33-8, fighting Mac Danzig, 21-9, one draw. And they even have Bruce Leroy. Alex Becerra, 7-5, fighting Motonobu Tezuka, 19-4-4. And I think this guy's got to be another Japanese guy by the name, Jiquan Zhang, 15-3, fighting 6-0 John Tuck. We got John Lineker, 19-6, fighting Yasuhiri Orishitani, 19-5-6. Ricky Fukuda, who's 18-6, fighting Tom DeBlas, who's 7-1. Takayaya Mizugaki, who's 15-7-2, fighting Jeff Hoagland, who's 10-5. And finally, Hyun Gyu Lim, 10-3, with one draw, fighting David Mitchell, who's 11-2. And if you have fuel to watch this one, if not, go to firstrowsports.eu. Watch this pretty, like me.
Rich, how long do you have to practice before you can get these names pronounced?
I don't know. I don't know. What did I screw up there?
No, you didn't screw. I mean, it sounded perfect, okay? That's what I'm saying. I think you had to spend at least 5 or 10 minutes on that going over. I mean, if you didn't, you've got a good knack for phonetics there. That sounded perfect in all languages.
No, I didn't do any researching, rehearsal there.
Okay.
That's winging it.
Improv.
I used to announce my own boxing matches when I was the club president over there at Norwich. I'm a snack bar microphone. It's kind of funny. But I told you the story about the guy from the UFC there, Buffer, Bruce Buffer. His least favorite name to pronounce is John Fitch. We got Joey Rivera coming on at 9. And Joey is famous on The Ultimate Fighter for, so far anyway, for beating up the smiling Sam Alvey guy in his first fight. And they were trying to set up kind of like a mismatch, but it turned out to be the other way around. And Joey's going to be on to talk about that. And just life inside the house. It's been a pretty interesting show the last couple of weeks.
I believe Sam Alvey was the first pick, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was a favorite.
On Shane's team, if I remember right, he was the first pick. And yeah, this was brought up that this is going to be a pretty one-sided fight, but Joey had other plans.
He's 7-1 going into the show, and just had one loss prior to going on the show itself, I guess, in July of 2011. He lost to Chip Mirza Pollard by doctor stoppage. So I don't know what that was all about, but I have to ask him about that. And obviously, you can't really tell us about what happens in the future on the show. But he can tell us about the process and the different coaches and his interactions with the different fighters in general. So we'll pick his brain about all that stuff for sure. And interestingly enough, just last week, I don't have it right in front of me, but I got a huge outline from the people that are doing PR for the UFC, but they're with the Showtime Strikeforce side of it, you know? I don't get it directly from the UFC people because of what they like there, but I get it from the Strikeforce people. And they sent me this big outline of their ratings because the last couple of weeks they've gone up in ratings. So they're all about reporting it themselves now rather than having other sites or bands. They're definitely kind of interesting. It actually goes in names of the different shows that they're competing with and what the different shows are. They posted it on our blog last night, 194. But it's out there. I'm sure other people have published it too. But we'll have to talk about that and, you know, what he thinks about the show and all that. All that jazz. But going back to boxing. I definitely want to talk about what we just barely mentioned last week, the Floyd Mayweather versus 50 Cent feud / publicity stunts. I don't know what it is now, but it's all over the hip-hop and boxing news. Floyd Mayweather is beefing with 50 Cent on Twitter and possibly in real life if Damon Feldman has anything to do with it. Billionaire Alki David and Damon Feldman are now trying to put $5 million up for Mayweather and 50 Cent to actually fight with oversized celebrity boxing gloves and headgear.
I was going to say, if Damon Feldman is involved, there's got to be a scam to it. I don't know where he's going to get $5 million, but I knew it would have to be a celebrity type thing, and it would have to be like oversized gloves. Well, pillow fight, because I know he does a lot of female pillow fights all the time. But his fights, he used to do a lot of pro boxing cards, and he always shoot, like, he had Butterbean on the one card, and this other fighter, he was a pretty tough man than anything. And then when the guy lost, because he fought a pretty decent boxer, not a great record, but the guy knew how to box, he had amateur pedigree. Then they tried to say that the opponent was on steroids. The guy was, like, not really in good shape. He was kind of fat. He just knew how to box. He wasn't on steroids. But Damon's been in the fight fix, and So anything with his name, I always just avoid.
Well, if the fight happens, it will be in Nevada, Las Vegas, Nevada, on December 14th. And this article, I'm sure, is wrong, but it says the proposed fight will happen if either of the two men accept the offer, which does not make any sense to me. So it's got to be a grammatical error. Because obviously if just one of them accepts the offer, the fight that they just talked about won't be able to happen. If either of the two men accept the offer, not both.
Okay. Here's a good question for you. If say Floyd has another fight, and I will say it to be anybody, and we'll just say Sergio Martinez, just for argument's sake. Now, when he fought Cotto, the three people that walked him out of the ring were 50 Cent, Triple H, and Justin Bieber. Who are going to be the three people to walk him out to the ring if he fights again? I mean, Triple H is still available. Justin Bieber is still available. But if he's not getting along with 50 Cent, he's going to have to find another rapper to walk him out.
He's got tons of rappers willing to step in and fill that void.
Yeah, true.
It's interesting. I wrote an article for feedcrossing.com, this whole Twitter beef between 50 and Floyd. And apparently, I guess it's a senior because Floyd Senior trains Andre Durrell, who is now a 50 Cent managed fighter. So one of the beefs, one of the little tweets in the beef was in reference to, I'm going to make Big Floyd rich, 50 Cent said. And then Floyd was above 50 Cent holding his money and holding his belts and using a lot of profanity and, you know, just ripping back a little bit on Twitter over the weekend. But we talked about last week how 50 came out there with this, you know, I want to sell my jacket for a dollar, the money team. But apparently they actually had lawyers fighting over Billy Dipp, who 50 Cent now is exclusively managing, even though Floyd had tried to sign him. Exclusively, but they have a contract. Typically, lawyers involved at one point with their dispute, which tells me it's not a publicity stunt, but that's what some people are saying. And I think it's for real, for sure, because Floyd is really hot and heavy over it, and calling him stuff like "fuck boy," "hold my belts." Stuff like that. So he's actually 50 Cent's actually gone after what's his name there, Floyd's advisor there. I don't know why I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Leonard Ellerbe.
Yeah, he's even mentioned him by name. He says Al Heyman has Floyd on an allowance, so they're fighting over who has more money. And actually, some writer had an article put together that said Forbes describes them as only $5 million apart. But Billy Dibb said he feels like he thinks that 50 actually has more money on hand. But net worth, I guess, goes to Mayweather. But we'll see. It sucks because, you know, all that money together in one room and one direction might help boxing. But both of them fighting against each other, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to do anybody any good. But at one point, 50 suggested that Gamboa is going to fight Floyd and move up in weight. I think a lot of people were laughing at that, but whatever. It's just the new boxing scene. According to 50 Cent. And we have no idea if Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao are going to fight anytime soon either, which makes it the whole thing even worse.
I wouldn't bet on it. I would not put any money on them. And you know, even Ike and John Scully said it today. He goes, you know what? I'm tired of hearing about it anymore. He goes, I've pretty much resigned that it's not going to happen. And the fact that, and then even more so, the fact that it's not as appealing as it was once 2-3 years ago. 3 years ago, that was the hottest thing in the world. And then you figure, you know, Pacquiao, and you know what? Going into the Pacquiao fight with Marquez, I believe it's 1 month from the fight. Look at his last so many fights. He had the great fight against Miguel Cotto that was fall of 2009. He had a great fight against Hatton in the spring of 2009. He knocked him out cold. Then he pulverized Cotto in fall of 2009. He took that fight against, first he fought Joshua Quade. I think that was March or somewhere in there. And he didn't look great against Quade. You know, he just looked like almost uninspired in there. And then Quade didn't want to fight. He didn't press the issue on him. He fought Shane Mosley. Then he fought Margarito. And he beat up Margarito pretty good. But when you get a quarter of the show like he did against Miguel Cotto, he tore into Cotto in that last round when Cotto was busted up and bloody, and he finished the show and he knocked him out. Against Margarito, he didn't do that. He pulled off the gas pedal. Then he fights Sugar Shane Mosley. And against Mosley, you know, he knocked him down. But then at the same time, you know, he pulled off the gas pedal. You know, he didn't want to, you know, pursue it. So, you know, there's a couple of fights in a row that he's doing that. Then he has the fight with Marquez. No one's worth it. And then the fight with Timothy Bradley. So you look at his performances have really declined. And I think a lot of it's the fact that he's losing his passion. You know, he fought so hard to get to where he was. He's now there. You know, and now he's finding, you know, religion and, you know, he's finding more of a, you know, a peaceful, you know, inner peace. And that's fine. Not so fine for a fighter, though. Now you go back to Floyd Mayweather. Now, Floyd's only fought so much in the last 2 years. He had the fight with Mosley where he got rocked pretty good. And then he went on to dominate. You know, and Mosley clearly didn't want to be in there anymore. He had the fight with Victor Ortiz that was, you know, a sham more than anything. I mean, he would have knocked out Ortiz anyway. But then you had the whole favorite headbutt in Ortiz and the hug and the kiss and the hug and the God knows what else, the grab of the ass and Jesus Christ. And he knocks him out when he's not looking. Then he has to fight with Cotto, which was a competitive fight. And Cotto fought very well. He clearly lost, but he fought very well. And then Mayweather goes again. But even in Mayweather, there was a decline in his performance. So now people are looking at it, well, a couple of years ago, this fight is red hot. But now this fight is lukewarm. You got two guys that don't want to play with each other. And one guy, as you can see, probably doesn't want to do this much anymore. And the other guy is more concerned with, his outside of the ring image. He's more concerned with his outside of the ring activities. So I don't think you're ever going to see this. And I don't, you know what? From talking to people anymore, boxing people, it doesn't get asked anymore. It used to be everybody I talked to. Oh, you went to a boxing website? Oh, you're in the boxing? You train people? What do you think of Mayweather and Pacquiao? I don't hear that much anymore. You know what I mean? That's on length grade heavyweight. Or, you know, or go ask me about, hey, or I'll talk to him about the Marshall Hamilton. Oh, man, who's up there? You know, who's the city? Oh, what did you think of this guy? Oh, remember the time? And they'll talk about fighters of the past, which is not necessarily a good thing. You want to talk about up-and-coming present fighters. Unfortunately, you get a great fighter like Andre Ward, who just doesn't get a lot of, you know, mainstream publicity.
Mentioned the HBO fight this weekend for the win at Las Vegas, featuring some lesser-known stars, but Veins Martirosyan, who's 32-0 with 20 knockouts, ranked number 3 by Ring Magazine, and Arislandi Lara, who's 17-1-1 with 11 knockouts, and who I saw live myself out at the Cosmopolitan in one of the fights when I was out there in Vegas. And Lara is in 6-0 at 20, and he represented the United States at the 2004 Olympics with Andre Durell and Andre Ward. Had a progressive amateur career when he was a national champion and Golden Glove champion 8 times. But Martirosyan is co-managed by Shelley Finkel, fights under the Top Rank banner, and this will be the first time he headlines a card. previously his biggest name was Kasim Uma, who he fought in 2010. That should be a pretty good fight. On HBO.
Yeah.
We also have bantamweight titleist Abner Mares, 24-0 with a one draw, 13 knockouts, fighting against Selmo Moreno, 33-1-1 with 11 KOs. And the WBC super champion belt up on the line there. Moreno just signed a four-fight deal with Golden Boy, which is the same banner that Mares fights under, so it's a good fight for them. What else we got going on? Anderson Silva's back in the news in MMA. Anderson Silva money became a favorite phrase of MMA fans after Lyoto Machida asked for that type of cash to face Rashad Evans on short notice back at UFC 133. And now Anderson Silva money is, I think, half of the UFC he asked for. You heard about this one, Tom?
No, I haven't heard this one yet.
he wants half of Jon Jones, and then I guess they put an actual number behind it. $1.25 billion is his request for a fight purse. Billion.
Yeah. Right.
So don't think we'll ever see that happen. But now, in a way, they're sick of promising stuff that he's not possibly going to be able to deliver on. So I guess he's going to promise now that if GSP wins this grudge match here over the interim / regular title with Condit, then I guess it's on. Silva is going to come into the ring personally and call him out, according to Dana White.
Well, I don't know. I'm still so old-fashioned, and I just never thought we'd see the day when fighters become matchmakers for themselves.
Wow.
That is just... Well, I don't know. I mean, if I was Dana White, I don't know what I would do. I'd say, well, maybe you just stay at 185 and we'll feed you a bunch of tomato cans. But then how's that going to work for the sales of the pay-per-view? I mean, this is a huge problem. The fight that fans want to see is him and Jones, period. I don't get it.
Well, I also hear whisperings that Jones is talking about eventually moving up to heavyweight, which would kind of solve the problem of having nobody to challenge him.
Well, I'd like to see eventually shortened to now. I mean, if he's going to move up, let's go. He's cleaned out the division. Move up and let's see what he can do up there. That would be a self-correcting problem, and then maybe we could get a little more excited about Anderson. Well, did they say, is Anderson going to move down for GSP? Is it going to be a catch weight?
I would think there's going to be a catch weight, but I think that guy would want to put their titles on the line for that kind of fight.
And then the question is, where does this leave Nick Diaz? Because he still has a stake in this whole thing, too. And really, I think GSP Diaz would be more intriguing because of the bad blood and all the trash talk between them.
Yeah.
Well,
we'll see.
Well, it'll sort itself out.
Now, here's the ratings thing that I was just talking about. I just found it. For Tough in its time period, Tough ranked number 3 in males 18 to 49. And males 25 to 54, while all adult demos placed within the top 5, trailed NBA on ESPN and Jungle Gold on Discovery, but was ahead of all other FX competitors. So that said, the UConn Men show on Discovery, I think, was what I was watching when it was on before, but now I guess it's Jungle Gold on Discovery that's beating it, along with NBA and ESPN in the recent time period here. But it's beating all the other FX competitors, so that's what they're emphasizing. it's doing better than Law & Order SVU on USA, The Longest Yard on TBS, and it did better than American Dad on Adult Swim. That's what they're emphasizing. Even though that one article mentioned that it didn't beat the 4 o'clock movie. A.M., 4 o'clock A.M. Great. Over the weekend, we had a pretty interesting fight between Denis Grachev and Lucien Bute. Grachev 12-1-1, Bute 31-1. And
there was quite some controversial decisions in both of them.
I guess so. That's what I hear too. I mean, apparently,
either one of them, but you know, I hope to change on. Some people thought, you know, okay, he did enough to win. He wasn't dominant, but he did enough to win. But he scores at 118, 110. Really preposterous.
Yeah, not good. Well, we also have the World Series of Fighting. I did see that they were positive. I did see an article headline. I did not get the article, but I did see something that the ratings were pretty positive. But basically, the company just had their first event on Saturday, and Andrei Arlovsky knocked out Devin Cole in the evening's main event. Opening match fighter Dustin Jacoby actually had to unlock the cage door on his own to let himself in, since he was sent out before Nevada officials were in place. But other than that, there was no hiccups. Let's see what else we get. The fighter payroll for the whole card was $352,000. But most important numbers are going to come when paid attendance figures will be released. There appeared to be roughly 5,000 people in attendance at the 7,000-seat arena, but the fans reacted like a heavily comped crowd. Pretty interesting fighters on that. I don't have the full results in front of me, but one of the big pieces of news this week, Stefan Bonner tested positive for a weight cutting type of steroid. I think it was the same one that Cyborg is on the sidelines for right now. Big news following his defeat to Anderson Silva, and it could tell you why he was so amped up in the first affected his performance that much. He was doing good going in, but even if he had won, it would have been an asterisk next to that fight for history. And there's actually people out there saying that it means he's not going to make the Hall of Fame and all of that, but I don't know. It is actually one of the most fairly common busts for steroids, is that type of steroid. And it is known for weight cutting. Even though it's not the first time he's been busted, it's not fatal to him getting into the Hall of Fame. I think he could still do it. But as we know from last week, he did retire, and maybe that's not a big coincidence that. Dana White announced that it had already come out then, and they just didn't publish it until later. But tested positive for a boldenone metabolite, and he was given a 9-month suspension and fined only $5,000. That's not all that much, considering he probably got paid a lot for the fight.
you take a product with like an amphetamine, you know, for like more like weight loss than anything, and you're losing 9 months of your career. I mean, that's harsh. Because, I mean, what makes it really difficult on a lot of these banned substances now are things that you can buy in your local CVS, your Walgreens, your Walmart, you know, GNC. You can go there and say, hey, you know, I want to, you know, lose some weight. And the person there can give you like a supplement, you know. Hey, this will help you burn calories or burn fat, you know. It's not how you get pounds, which actually in the boxing field doesn't help you that much anyway. Sorry for me to say that. You know, it doesn't, you know, make you be able to, you know, jump over tall buildings and catch and shoot bullets. No, it's a few pounds. But, you know, you've got to be careful. You can't take a multivitamin anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to start going into MMA locker rooms and saying, you take this pill and it makes you the best BJJ practitioner in the world. You won't believe it. Just makes you a ninja overnight. No, but
that's right.
It's actually funny you mentioned that say over-the-counter supplement thing, because Mo Lawal got tested for the same thing, and actually this is the second positive test for Bonner. It was Boldenone the last time, I think, and that was the old penalty. It was a 9-month suspension and $5,000. This time, he said it was trying to speed up the recovery time for an injured elbow for this fight. It was his excuse, but also this time it was a different type of drug. It wasn't Boldenone. That's not the one for weight cutting. That's a metabolite resulting from steroid use. This time was drostanolone, an anabolic steroid. And earlier this year, Mo Lawal tested positive for that and claimed it was an over-the-counter supplement he was taking unbeknownst to him. But he was still fined and suspended. And the UFC actually did its own drug testing because the fight was in Rio for UFC 153. And they tested each fighter on the card. And there's only one other guy who got busted in. Go figure, it was Dave Pee Wee Herman. Busted for the second time in his UFC career. And, surprisingly, there's no announcement that he's been thrown out either, so he still might have another chance. We'll see.
What did he test positive for?
Dave Herman?
Yes.
What they just legalized in Colorado and Washington.
Oh, okay. So in
marijuana.
Other words, they thought this would be a performance enhancing drug, huh? Right, got it.
Yeah.
Of all the drugs, I'd hate to see someone, if I'm in the cage of the ring waiting on him, and I'd hate to see him coming in that condition. Wouldn't you hate that for your opponent? Ugh, unbelievable.
Well, if they smoke too much, I think it would be a disadvantage.
Yeah, I think a little bit.
Yeah, no.
Maybe in the med corner.
Doesn't,
too long.
Doesn't really help you train that much. My junior year at Lock Haven, what Dr. Cox used to do was when we would have an open meeting for the boxing club, you know, you'd have a bunch of guys come out. We usually have 40 or 50 guys come out. And then sometimes we'd start the year around 35 to 40. Some people come out, then they'd end up, you know, just coming out of the meeting and never pursuing it. Then some people would come out for a few practices and quit. Then after the sparring started, then guys really started whittling down once they got hit in the nose for the first time. It was my junior year. We had a kid in the dorm that lived about three rooms down from me. And he was like, yeah, well, let me talk about boxing and boxing. Boxing up, I know it from the previous year, and I'm like, this kid's a pothead. You know, I knew it. And he looked like somebody who came on scene, but he wanted to really get into it. So he got to see the first meeting of it, the first meeting. And Dr. Thompson, there's a few strain tactics in there, one of them being random drug tests. Now, I was there for 4.5 years, I never saw one. But, I mean, I wouldn't have been shocked if we ever had them, but never saw one in 4.5 years. But yeah, he mentioned random drug tests, and then the, also the one assistant coach is like, you know, and you got to get in shape, you got to condition yourself, you got to run 3 miles every day, you know, to get in shape. You got to do at least 3 miles every day. So this kid, I think his name was Justin, I don't remember, he quit. I see him in the doors, I'm like, oh man, Justin, what's up, you know? You were all gung-ho about it a week ago, why'd you quit? Oh, well, it's because assistant coach Mike said, you know, we have to run 3 miles every day, and I don't like to run. Yeah, you don't have to run, you know, if that was a team, you run individually, so if you don't want to run, you don't run, you know? Yeah, but I don't want to run, I don't want to run. I'm like, well, you don't really have to, you know, you probably won't get in good shape and get your ass kicked, but, you know, you don't have to. And I was like, you know, Justin, I said, you know, don't bullshit me anymore. You know, you quit because of the random drug test. I never tell them that I never saw one in my tenure there. So I said, yeah, come on, we know. Don't bullshit me. Don't lie to me. You know that you can't pass a drug test.
Well, you know, now that it's medical marijuana in some states, including my old state of Massachusetts now, you might see these tests challenged a little bit more on the level of UFC. I don't know if it's going to win any challenges, but, you know, the Dick Diaz fiasco gained a lot of attention over that issue. So we'll see if it happens. I don't see the major benefit. I know guys from time to time get busted for it. The UFC rarely throws them out for it either. But they have to put it on the list for one reason or another. But anyway, we do have to give Joey Rivera a ring from The Ultimate Fighter, Coach Carwin versus Roy Jones. Not Roy Jones. Big Country Roy Nelson.
That'd be an interesting fight.
Hello.
Joey. Hey, how's it going?
Yes, Joey.
This is Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron from Fight News Unlimited.
Nice. How you doing, sir?
Good.
You said Rambo?
Rabble Rousing Rich Bergeron. My nickname.
Oh, okay.
We also have our psychic, resident psychic Tom.
Good evening, Joyce. Good evening, Joyce.
Thank you.
And our boxing guy. Tony the Tornado Pentacal, sometimes we call him the Rain Man of boxing because he's that statistically accurate with stuff.
Cool, the Tornado?
The Tornado, yeah. And we know your name is, your nickname is Boom Boom. I'm sure Tony's wondering if that came from Ray Mancini.
No, the Boom Boom somebody gave me. I'm originally a judo player. I started playing judo in 98. And, you know, they gave me that nickname a long time ago because I didn't know how to control myself. So I just kind of go crazy in the middle of practice.
So it's like boom, boom, like explosion.
Yeah, boom, boom, no control. I heard everybody else and myself, everybody else around me. So it's carried on for a little while.
All right, well, we know you're involved in fighting now. We obviously...
Yeah, you're breaking up. Say it again.
Oh, we know you're involved in The Ultimate Fighter here, the season going on right now. Can you tell us a little bit about how that process started for you?
Tell us a little bit about how what? I'm sorry.
How, you know, the whole process got started for you with getting invited and all that to the show?
Okay, yeah, I could tell you how that worked. The way it started off was that... you know, I've tried out three, maybe four times in the past, and the last call was for people who had already tried out. And like I said, I've tried out three or four times. I tried out at 170, at 165, and then at 170 again. And you know, there was a lot of people, so it's kind of hard to get in. But I encourage anybody to go that. Level before. I've never seen the elite level, and you know, training and going with 15 other guys, seeing different guys cutting weight and different ways of training methods and warming up and cool down methods, it's an eye opener because you get to learn so much stuff.
And how about your level of fame? How has that changed since before and after?
You know, I'll tell you the truth. I'm in California right now. I was out here visiting my buddy, and it's weird because, you know, I was, you know, we were outside last night, and our next door neighbor was like, hey, are you on the Ultimate Fighter? I'm like, yeah, well, you know, we're following you, you know, blah blah blah, and you know, it's pretty cool. And everywhere, you know, I'm in San Diego right now, so you know, I'm training at the arena, and a couple of guys knew, you know, recognized me right away. So it's pretty. I like it because it opened up, you know, I love it because it opened up a lot of doors in the different gyms, and now I'm able to, you know, come down to different places and get a different look and increase my level that way.
And what's it like with the coaching situation there with Roy Nelson? I know he's a little weird, a little different, but does he deserve all the criticism, or is he really a good guy, what do you think?
You know, it's hard to say because, you know, he's on his own agenda. I know one of the things that, you know, even though I was there at the, in the Tough House, I don't see exactly what they're recording. So I know in episode one or episode two, he had said something about that his wife was pregnant and that the Ultimate Fighter was the wrinkle in his daily plans. So I think because he could have been like Shane Carwin, you know, he had came with a strength and conditioning coach, wrestling coach, you know, an MMA champion. He had brought Nate Marquardt down, and you know, he brought a mental coach around, and you know, he brought the full staff. Where Roy Nelson, you know, he's from Vegas, and he kind of brought his friends around, had two different boxing coaches, and himself. So it's just kind of a, you know, it wasn't a complete staff. I think he well, but he didn't get.
Oh, you're fading out a little bit. Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. There you go. I think somebody else was piping up with a question, and I walked all over him a little while ago.
Joey, I was. Well, first off, I want to congratulate you on the Sam Alvey fight. You know, taking out the other side's first pick has got to be a psychological
boost. Thank you very much.
And also, I noticed that from your record, you've won a lot of your fights by submission, and yet in one of your previous fights, you fought a gentleman named Eric Reagan. Reagan, I believe I'm pronouncing it right. And I know that he has an outstanding pro boxing record, and he also fought at some high levels in the kickboxing and Muay Thai. And you stopped him in the first round. Tell us about that fight. You stopped him with punches.
Well, the Eric Regan fight, what happened was, you know, he came out strong in the first round, and then I kicked him in the stomach a couple times, and then I hit him in the head, and then I kicked him in the liver, and then when he fell, I just, you know, I jumped on top of him, and you know, I went to town on them, and they were able to
stop. Wow. They're
incredible guys. So I was looking forward to that fight. It was my, you know, it was a fight in Tucson. So it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, that really shows how well-rounded
you
are. Yeah, it was
a really cool fight, and mm-hmm. to get that liver kicked off was even cooler.
Yeah, because coming from a judo background, coming from the judo background that you said, and I know how good your ground skills are, but you've really worked on your stand-up, and that's the total package, and I guess that's what it takes to compete nowadays. There's no more of this one-dimensional stuff. I mean, you've got to be good everywhere, and it sounds like you're well on the road for that. I mean, it's outstanding effort.
Yeah, a lot of people think that I'm a grappler because you know my first five fights via submission, but I don't want to say it's my favorite because I really like to do MMA. I like to do them all at one time, but I'm really going closer to doing the striking right now. I'm having a lot more fun with it. It's a new time. It's new for me. You know, I've only been doing it for about 5 years now, and you know, it's got me really really hungry to do it. Really, you know, do your striking.
How is there any favorite technique that you would say that you have, any submission that you prefer over any other, or any punch or kick?
I wouldn't say I have, you know, something that I prefer more than the other. And, you know, originally I was the ground guy, and then I started doing the striking. Overall, I like doing, you know, training mixed with martial arts, whether it's striking and grappling mixed together. Just feel like I could put it together a little bit easier that way.
Well, I guess that way you can be prepared. Yeah, you can be prepared for whatever your opponent gives you. You look at it like that.
Yes. Yes.
Python, can you tell us, as far as, you know, the stuff that we see on TV, obviously you're seeing it now too. Was that kind of the stuff that, you know, you get the guys almost fighting each other, drinking a lot, all that stuff. Was that stuff encouraged, or did that just kind of, you know, happen?
Well, I don't think anybody's putting anybody, you know, they didn't put any liquor in our mouths and say, hey, you need to drink this. I don't believe it was encouraged that way. But, you know, when we got there, they had a full liquor, you know, room completely full of liquor and anything you could think of. So I don't know if they were verbally saying go on drink. But I know that, you know, that was a thought process behind them, you know, filling the house up full of alcohol.
It's been a little bit entertaining, but kind of embarrassing at the same time. I don't know. As far as that, you know, I know you can't reveal what happens at the end of it, but what's it been like to go from filming it, not knowing what's going to get on the air, and now seeing some of the episodes and seeing what they picked?
Well, it's kind of funny because you know, they had put on after. You know, prior to my fight, they had put the part about me and my wife and you know, whatever I said there. But they had talked about all kinds of stuff, so they kind of really, you know, they pick whatever they want to put out there. They put the information. They want you to know whatever they want you to know. So, you know, it was cool though. You know, I had a lot of fun with it, and I encourage anybody to go on the television show and go.
And do you have anybody out there that you watch constantly? You like to try to pick things up from, or that you would consider a favorite fighter of yours?
You know, I really like to. I'm into watching kickboxing. You know, I watch a lot of kickboxing. I watch Badar Ari and Overeem when he was fighting in Pride, and when he was fighting in K-1, and you know, a lot of kickboxing. You know, Peter Arts, Ernesto Hoots. You know, I really enjoy watching the kickboxing, the K-1 style. You know, there's no ground techniques, but the stand-up techniques. You know, most of these guys are getting knocked out. They're getting hit hard with perfect punches and perfect kicks. So I enjoy that. I enjoy it to see the art of Muay Thai and the art of kickboxing.
What's your ultimate goal in the sport of mixed martial arts?
You know, I'd like to fight three to five more years and win a world title, and then retire and start a different lifestyle, do something else, you know, stay involved with mixed martial arts. But, you know, obviously I'm not going to fight forever, and I don't want to. So, like I said, about three to five more years of fighting at this level, and then I'll do something else.
And how about role models growing up? Was there anybody that helped you in and out of the sport just to keep you going and get you where you are today?
You know, I have my older brother to thank, because he's one of them older brothers that kind of followed me around and encourage me, you know, playing. So I played basketball, baseball, and football, and he would always be there and watch my games. And, you know, I've always wanted to impress him. So, you know, that happening, always, you know, always wanted me to, you know, I've always wanted to do good for him to see. And I've always, you know, always tried to impress him. And, you know, now that I found, you know, my new glory, my, you know, mixed martial arts, you know, now I want to impress him still to this day for that. And, you know, I want to impress my, you know, my marriage. I want to impress my wife and my friends and my family. And you know, yeah, I would say my brother, my older brother, he was definitely there for me and watched out for me. I had a wrestling coach, Rob Hayden, that he watched out a lot for me and gave me a job and kept me involved in wrestling. So, you know, I did have a couple of people who looked out for me and, you know, made sure that I was doing the right thing.
And what was the thing that actually got you involved in fighting in the first place?
I'm sorry, say it again. You're coming in broken up.
What got you involved in fighting in the first place? How did you end up in the sport?
Well, I first started fighting because my parent, my mom, you know, she you know was involved with the wrong partners. And you know, I ended up really getting involved when you know, she was having domestic disputes. And, you know, for me, I told myself, you know, one day I'm gonna help her out, and I'm gonna kick so and so's butt, you know, for doing that to my mom. And you know, that's how I got involved. I started doing boxing when I was, you know, 12, 13 years old, and you know, that's how I really got involved, because you know, I wanted to take care of my mom and defend her. Defend her and defend anybody else around me.
All right. So, yes, The Wire. Did you ever watch that on HBO? There was a kid on there in the same situation almost. He got into boxing.
Well, you know, that martial arts and, you know, boxing, kickboxing, these martial arts is a great way to, you know, it's a great outlet, you know. You know, I know that if I didn't have, you know, martial arts when I was younger, God knows what I would have been at, you know, I could have been doing whatever, but instead I was taking out my frustrations and, you know, stress, you know, reducing my stress by, you know, staying physically active inside the gym. So I really had martial arts to thank for where I'm at right now. And martial arts has got me where I'm at right now. I wouldn't be where I'm at right now without it. You know, I could be in the street doing whatever. And following in the wrong footsteps of others. So, but I mixed martial arts helped me create my own path in this lifetime.
Yeah, I didn't really take boxing very far. But when I was a kid, it was real popular to say your mother after every insult, and I lost my mother when I was really young. So that's what used to get me on my street fights. If somebody would just say your mother, and I'd be all over them. And it really scared me at one point because, you know, you just lose all control. The switch flips and, you know, you can get scared of what you're actually capable of doing in that mindset. So once I channeled it into boxing, I think it was a lot healthier for me. And who knows where I would have ended up if I never was able to do that. I hate to think about it. You know.
Well, God knows where you would have ended up. It's a good thing you got involved with it because you could have been channeling the energy someplace else. God knows, drinking or drugging and doing something that you're not supposed to be doing.
But, everybody needs that release, whether it's fighting or, you know, some other kind of form of physical release. You gotta get that bad energy out of you, I guess, one way or another. And
a lot of people resort to doing drugs. Well, you know, athletes can resort to training. And they, you know, when they hit their second wind, their endorphins are pumping and going, and that's, you know, all natural for reducing stress, and you don't have to do any drugs. So, you know, mixed martial arts or martial arts for athletes in general is their drug. And at least that's how I feel.
Yeah, that's a good way to look at it. Speaking of working out, what's the most important thing you say you do to get ready for a fight?
I think the most important part to get ready for a fight would probably be either the mental aspect of the fight or the physical aspect of it. So it's two, you know, there's two very big parts of it. You know, training is 90% physical, 10% mental, and then your fight is 90% mental, 10% physical. So you have to have, you know, really strong preparing for a fight, I believe.
Now, where are you originally from?
I'm originally from New Jersey, Vineland, New Jersey. Right now I live in Tucson, Arizona, and I own a gym there too. It's called Apex Mixed Martial Arts.
Okay. So, yeah, I was obviously probably not your first trip to Vegas, huh? Or was it?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Was that your first trip to Vegas for the show, or no? You've been there before?
No, no, that was like the third or fourth time. I tried out three times. That was a poor time, me trying to get to Vegas, me trying to get on the Tough Show.
So what was, you know, looking back, what was some of the memorable moments of being on the show that you can share with us? Some stuff.
You know, I think the most memorable thing that I the whole scholar relationships with a couple of different guys inside the house. You know, obviously, you know, we all slept in the same rooms. Like, you know, it doesn't matter what team you're on, you were going to sleep with someone of the other team. So, you know, I made really good friends with a couple of my teammates and a couple of their teammates, and, you know, they're in different parts of the world. So, you know, right now after the show gets done, I'm going to go and train in a different place. It's kind of like what I'm doing right now. But, you know, one of my buddies, Igor, that I met at the show, he lives in Switzerland, so I'll go up there to Switzerland. And then, you know, Michael Hill, he's from Toshio in Canada. And then Mike Ritchie, he's from Montreal. You know, so we got all these different places on, you know, where I have connections through that I can go over there and train now, which is really how you get better, is by training with other people. That's what I believe in, and I firmly believe that the only way to get better is by challenging yourself going outside of your own realm, and, you know, just kind of like I'm doing right now.
Yeah, you know, you definitely have to be ready for any different type of style. So it helps to have different mentalities and physical characteristics to work with. You know, it's you're never going to get the same looking, same acting type of opponent.
I'd also have to say, Joey, that sometimes you can hear the same thing slightly different, maybe from another trainer, and just pick up something, you know, just a little unique angle that really drives the point home even more. So that's a great path to keep moving around like that. Really, it's best thing you can do.
That's so, you know, it's funny that you say that, because I just trained with Dean Lister. You know, he just, I came down, I trained with him at Victory, and you know, he went over some stuff that I work on, but he said it just a little bit different, and he made this so much more tighter right now that, it, mm-hmm. you know, it's exactly what you said. It's him reiterating, or the coach is reiterating something that I already know, but tweaking it a little bit to make it that much better.
Right. I mean, it's kind of like when you're a teenager, your parents tell you things and you don't want to listen. And then you hear the same thing from some other adult and it clicks a little better. You know, not that you were taught wrong, but it's just that different little variety there. So that is a great path to be on.
Now, on the show, what can you tell us about the show just in general that the average viewer will probably never know?
They feed us whatever we want. We basically whatever we want. We drink whatever we want. They really make it a point to keep on your diet. I know we've had Cameron differently as gluten free. So they made it a point to make sure that all his food was gluten free. For myself, I don't eat a lot of meat. So you know they bought whatever I wanted whenever I wanted. Keeping us on our diet and giving us that look, you know, what you're going to need in order for you to be successful in mixed martial arts.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't know that, but, you know, they confine you to a house.
Yeah, so you can try out for the show, and some of these guys that were on the show were sleeping on people's couches and weren't eating at all. You know, they were going from day to day. You know, some of the guys were able to go in there, have a bed to sleep in, eat whatever they want, order whatever they wanted to eat. And it's a great experience to be around 15 other world-class athletes who are trying to get a contract in the UFC.
Yeah, the guy who fought on last week's show was saying Justin was loving it there. He lost his fight. I forget his name offhand, but it's kind of funny you mentioned that. You know, he was in hog heaven. James something. His last name. Anyway, What was it like dealing with all these little pranksters on the show? Did anybody get really tired?
You know, it wasn't like how they, as bad as it seems. It was, and then another thing is that I don't really get too involved with all of that, with all of that drama going on, and kind of, you know, I'm a little bit older, I'm 32, so I was able to keep my nose clean and keep myself in focus.
Well, I think you've done an outstanding job of resisting that party atmosphere in there. I mean, I'm very impressed with how you've handled yourself, Joey, and I wish you all the best, and I hope you win the thing.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
And what do you think about, though, the overall success of MMA over the years and how far the Ultimate Fighter itself as a show has come since the beginning?
I think it's just going to get it's going to get bigger and better, and it's going to grow leaps and bounds, especially now that we're on FX and, you know, Ultimate Fighter, it being there, there's going to keep on producing multiple champions, and really, you look at the guys coming out of there, they have a lot of really, really high talent guys, you know, still fighting the UFC from one of the first, you know, one or two UFCs. So, you know, I think they're going to continue with the Ultimate Fighter, and Ultimate Fighter is going to keep on producing, you know, champions and very competitive and exciting fighters.
Basically, is there anybody out there that you really want to fight in the UFC at some point? If and when you get there? No, you can't tell us, really.
I think... as far as I'm concerned, it was an honor to fight him. He was the number one seed person there. So for me, I like to fight at the higher level as possible. So the top of, five, top 10% out there, you know, in the UFC, that's what I would like. Now, is that possible? I'm not exactly sure, but you know, that's what I'm looking forward to, doing something like that, fighting top 5-10% in the world.
Alright. Now, is there anybody out there you want to give a shout out to, say hello to, or thank, or anything like that?
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Pierce Fabrication. I want to give a shout out to my gym, Apex Mixed Martial Arts in Tucson. You can follow me on Twitter at Joey Boom Boom, or you can check me out on my Facebook at Joey Rivera. And, I want to thank everybody who's been out there supporting me, Coach Rob Hadak, my wife, she's been a big support, Evolve Physical Therapy and Sport Performance, that's in Tucson, and all the gyms, basically all the gyms in Arizona, because I believe that, you know, Arizona's very competitive, and if they weren't as competitive as they were, I wouldn't be in the situation where I'm at right now, because, you know, Arizona, you know, we home a lot of champions and a lot of really good fighters. So, you know, these are the guys we're going against locally, and some of the top people are you know, UFC champions like Benders and, you know, Dominic Cruz or something. And the competitors in Arizona is where I grew up competing in that circle. So, I want to thank all the competition in Arizona, because, like I said, I wouldn't be where I'm at right now if we didn't have such great competition there.
It must be great training weather, huh? You must be able to lose a lot of weight pretty easy out there.
Yeah, because it's super hot. It's super hot. You know, I'm in San Diego right now. I'm having a great time. I end up getting to train at Victory MMA, and today I'm training at the arena, mixed martial arts. So it's really cool. I want to give a shout out to Joe Storte too. He was in the work with me a little bit today and showed me some stuff that I can improve on.
All right. Well, it was definitely great talking to you. I'm an avid watcher of the show. You're the first guy we've talked to that's on it. So I think this is actually the first time we've talked to somebody while the show is airing. I know I've had a few tough guys on before, but I think this is a first for us in getting somebody while the show is still taping. I mean, while the show is still airing. But what did you think of the last season where they did the live? Do you think that was?
I thought it was pretty good. I thought it was a little bit too long in this, the way they're doing it right now. They went back to the web. I definitely think it's a lot better this way than the fighters having to be away from the family for 14 weeks. You know, that's really, really hard. I can't even imagine. I was gone for 7 weeks, and the people that did the 14 weeks, I take my hat to them. Take my hat off to them. These guys did a great job being able to stay there and keep their sanity at the same time.
Yeah. Well, the live one, my main concern was the way the guys weakened it, you know, like three weeks in a row. Some guys had to fight 4 weeks in a row. It's just brutal on you. And I talked to a guy, Chuck O'Neill, like maybe a year ago, year and a half ago, probably by now. And he was talking about even when it was taped, when he was on it, and he had to fight a bunch of times on the show in a row every week. And takes a real toll on you, I can imagine. Being in college, fighting with headgear and shorter rounds was tough, fighting every week in boxing. And that's, you know, you only have the moves, not even. So you have a real fight every week, I can imagine. It must have been really rough to have to endure that. But at the same time, you know what kind of prize is on the line. So I guess you got plenty of motivation.
I think the guys going into the house are definitely prepared, or they're trying to mentally prepare. So it's kind of a dream come true, to be honest with you guys, that can fight the 4 to 6 weeks, at least for us. I mean, that is really where it's at. You know, I like that, and anybody being able to go through that type of experience is, definitely a great experience, and, you know, it reduces the arousal level of the fight and, put you around all these different other fighters and, you know, learning different habits of good guys. You know, that's where the progression is. That's where I was able to progress being there, seeing all these other people do different, different habits of their lifestyle, you know, being able to take good and leave the bad there.
All right. Well, we definitely enjoyed the conversation. We'll keep an eye out for you on the show, and I look forward to finding out what happens. So I definitely wish you the best of luck, even though it's already predetermined at this point.
And I'll say this much, Joey. Psychic Tom's crystal ball says all good things for you.
All righty. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it, and you guys have a great one.
You too.
All right. You too, Joey. Thanks a lot.
And I'd like to just mention, of course, Melissa Ingram set that up for us. So for hooking us up with a good interview. We still don't know what happened last week. I'd like to ask, I guess, you know, where the heck were you? But she said she reminded him half an hour before the call, so who knows? He was, like I said, he was probably working out, so I wouldn't want to be in his way for that. More power to him. But we got another guest who's going to be calling in a few minutes about a wrestling show in Massachusetts. But before we do that, at some point along the way, we lost Tony. I don't know whether he just gave up on the MMA guy or his phone went out. But we got to get Tony back. So here. Tony, what happened? Did you hang up on us?
Yeah, well, I didn't send an email. My phone froze on me. So I thought it was my version of technical difficulties.
All right, well, we're back. And we got a guy, Mark, from Massachusetts coming up any minute now. He's going to tell us about a wrestling show in Canton, benefit for the kids. But until then, I got a couple other little nuggets here we could talk about. Kyle Kingsbury, cast member on The Ultimate Fighter Season 8, coming off a pretty brutal fight with Jimmy Manuwa. And now he's working from the sport. He has an 11-5 record with one no contest, but lost his last three fights to Stephen Bonner, Glover Teixeira. Newell. suffered two orbital bone fractures against Manila in an exciting fight that many felt was the fight of the night on UFC Unfueled TV5. He had the fight stopped due to an eye injury, and the UFC didn't release him, but he's talking about retiring anyway, we'll see. But basically his reason for not making the announcement yet is he never knows when he's going to wake up and, you know, still have the itch, so he's going to wait till he heals up and then see what happens. What, Tony? Right. Speaking of your area there, Tony, I know I watched the big Phillies game this weekend. Or was it last night? Was it last night? That was on? I mean, Monday night? What was the Phillies game this week? I mean, the Eagles, not the Phillies, obviously. I can barely hear you.
Yeah, the Eagles played the Saints in the video.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of interesting. It's like, Chucky, John Gruden there, said it best right at the beginning. He says, you can't play quarterback when they're flat on your back.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, that's true, and I won't disagree with that. Just part of the problem is, it's everything here, Rich. And, you know, I mean, I never played quarterback, except Haven played many times up on the hill between High Hall and McIntyre Hall, and I quarterbacked many of those games. I'm surprised that the LHE team, which was still averaging about 1 to 2 wins a year, but then didn't sign me up as quarterback. Because what I could do, Rich, is I could read a defense. And that's one thing Michael Vick can't and never could do and still can't. I remember we were on the air a couple of years ago, you and I, when the Eagles signed him, because I remember you saying that I was visibly distracted that night because I got about 100 texts during the course of our two-hour show about Michael Vick getting signed. But the fact is the guy cannot develop he can't identify a hot read, he can't read a blitz, and that's the problem. Now, first of all, they're passing too much for a shitty offensive line that has 4 of their 5 starters out. You got to be able to just develop. Look at certain guys, and I'm going to give you 4 names actually, and one he will be last. You have Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, and Eli Manning. Eli's the one I hate. Why are they the least sacked quarterbacks every year? Because they read the defenses, they read the blitzes, they audible out of them, or they audible to a hot receiver. Michael Vick doesn't do that. He holds on to the ball. He's not as fast as he was 10 years ago. He's still fast, not as fast as he was 10 years ago, and that's why he's big. I'm just an idiot thing, you know?
Well, hopefully it gets better. That was a bad performance. That was one of the worst I've seen by him.
But you know what really sucked about it, Rich, more than anything? I was in the football pool that I run. I was in the finals last week. I picked the Saints. So now there was 5 wins going on. 2 had the Eagles, 2 had the Saints. Saints win, now comes down to me and another guy. We had points. Well, he had 15 points. I had 59 points. So I said, you know what? Saints offense is picking it up. Eagles, offense should be able to exploit the Saints to get the worst defense in the league. There's got to be a lot of points in this game. Well, because they're 5-6 in the red zone, they got 6 points out of them. To the fact that I lost 1 point, they lost out of $200. Do you think I'm a little pissed off? Yeah.
Yeah.
Nah, they lost. I think I didn't get any money out of it.
Well, we have Mark from Massachusetts live now. How's it going, Mark?
Hey, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, good. Now, you got a big wrestling show coming up in Canton. Why don't you give us the rundown on that?
Yeah, December 9th in Canton, Massachusetts. It's at the Massachusetts Hospital School. The Mass Hospital School is a school that is for the disabled children. and we're putting on an action-packed wrestling event, UWF, which is run by Bobby Cruz, who's a ring announcer for Ring of Honor. And he's kind of stepping aside and promoting this event for the kids, for the disabled kids, and we're bringing in Jerry the King Lawler, which should be a pretty interesting event to have.
All right.
What was that? I know we had the heart attack. I was asking if Jerry Lawler would help you enough to do that with his
He's not going to be wrestling. But he's just going to be doing an in-ring interview, and he's going to be there for autographs. I believe he's back on the WWE this week, and he's flying in specifically to help raise awareness for these kids and for this school. So, we're pretty honored to have him. He's a legend in the business.
He won't be living Roddy Roddy Piper, right?
Excuse me?
Then he's not going to be body flaming Rowdy Roddy Piper. He's just going to be interviewing me.
No, we looked at getting Roddy Piper, although his fee for coming out for these shows is a little bit too high, especially you think it'd be a little less when it's involves kids and disabled children and charity. But yeah, Jerry Lawler is pretty generous guy. He's coming out. There's two shows over the weekend. There's one for the kids at the Mass Hospital School, and he's also doing a show for a local police department in Fall River, Massachusetts, the back-to-back night. So it should be pretty exciting.
So how did you get involved in this whole project?
Well, I have twin sons who are 17 years old, and they have muscular dystrophy, and they attend this school. So, and I'm no stranger to running charity wrestling events. I've run a few over the years in my day, and it seems to always be a good take for the people, and they seem to enjoy it. And I'm actually going to give it a crack myself at the Squared Circle, and I'll be facing off against a local MMA fighter to help raise some awareness for the kids myself. But we'll be tag teaming with a duo that is yet to be announced. Yeah, thanks. So I sent you over the flyer. So if you want to post this on your site, that'd be great. We'd greatly appreciate it. If there's anybody out there listening that's in the Massachusetts area, they can certainly contact me. There's information on the event flyer, and if you'd be so kind to put that up on your website, then they can take a look. We also have Maria Kanellis as well, a former WWE. Diva, and then we also have Kevin Steen, the Ring of Honor world champion, also wrestling this night.
Cool.
Pretty awesome.
Yeah, should be a good event.
Say that again.
Say that whole thing again. You're kind of fading.
No, I was going to say that. I said, that's pretty awesome. I said, Richard probably will be able to tell you, I'm kind of a big-time wrestling fan myself. I grew up on it, watching it, going back to the matches with Hulk Hogan and Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff and King Kong Bundy and all those guys when I was a kid. So I was like, it's a shame that I'm so far. I didn't even go to sleep.
Diamond Dallas
Page on
not too long ago, too. So
yeah,
a lot of these guys, like to come out and do stuff for the kids, so it's going to be a fun night. We're excited to have Jerry the King Lawler here, and we're excited to have Kevin Steen and Maria Kanellis, and hopefully we can raise a ton of money for these handicapped kids. And again, it's in Canton, Massachusetts. And if you want some information on how to get tickets, you can reach out to me. My name is Mark, and my number is 508-889-2882. Again, that's 508-889-2882. They can reach out, send me a message, send me a text, whatever, and we'll get back to you. We'll leave some tickets for you at the door.
And how much are these tickets going to be for people?
They're $20 a ticket, and 100% is goes towards the cause. It's a 501c3 organization. It's a complete tax write-off, and there's going to be four championship matches this night, and it's on a Sunday afternoon. And here in Massachusetts, typically people on Sundays are pretty much religious Patriots fans, and they're playing on Monday night that weekend, so it actually works out well.
Oh.
You know, it's a perfect thing to do with your family on a Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock and catch some great live pro wrestling matches and for a great cause.
Awesome. Well, it's been great talking to you, and we'll keep in touch. Send us anything that you can on the event.
I sent you along an email with the poster, so if you can put that up on your site, I'd appreciate it, and thanks for having me.
Sure. Anytime.
All right. Take care.
Keep up the good work. All right. Yeah, Canton, Massachusetts. I used to drive through it a lot. Didn't really hang out much in Canton, but it was like one of those towns where when I worked for the newspaper down there in Massachusetts as both a reporter and a deliverer for the circulation department, I would have one route, the Indian Lane route, we called it in Canton. And it was actually, I think, between one of the schools is where you came out to take one. You took the shortcut for that route. But Canton, yeah, it's an interesting town area. A lot of nice little neighborhoods tucked in there, and it's right near, you know, a lot of the big cities around it. So, you know, you get a little country, you get a little city, but Indian Lane, it was like a little dirt. It was about as country as you get in Massachusetts, in certain parts of it, to get out there and get the papers out. But it's kind of an interesting little area. But that show sounds like it's going to be a good deal, December 9th. $20, you get a ticket, you get to meet Jerry Lawler probably, and see a bunch of other interesting stars, and you help a good cause there at the same time. So check that out if you're in Massachusetts. And let's see what else we got up. We got anything big coming up for boxing that you know of, Tony, this weekend?
Well, we talked about the fight on HBO this weekend. So I said I'm going to try to check them out. And that's really it. I mean, we actually got a couple cards coming up from Philadelphia over the next few weeks. And I don't know how to deal with it.
They're mumbling. I can barely hear you.
Well, there's a couple of cards come up in Philadelphia over the next few weeks, and you know me, if there's a chance for me to go somewhere and annoy somebody, I'm going to be there. Just got to check out my schedule when my hours start coming out for, you know, some of the work I'm going to be doing.
One other story I wanted to mention. Ronda Rousey, famous for kind of breaking into the MMA scene with a big bang. She's continuing to appeal to mainstream audiences with a Sports Illustrated feature. She just had a TV spot to promote it. And basically a circulation of 3.2 million with the magazine. And a weekly readership of 23 million people, and they feature in its November 5th issue. And on Saturday, the Sports Illustrated show will feature a segment on Rousey. I don't know if it's this Saturday or last Saturday it's from, but the show airs Tuesday at 2:30 p.m. I think that was last Tuesday. Anyway, Ronda Rousey lays the smackdown is the name of the piece, written by Melissa Segura. And there's some interview highlights online that didn't make the final piece, but basically the story details Ronda's youth, her Olympic success in judo, and her recent rise to fame in MMA. And Dana White's recently broke his opposition to the potential for women to ever fight in the UFC by saying Rousey likely had opened up that door for the near future. And we had one of her former opponents on the meet to lead a rematch sometime soon. and avoid the arm bar this time, hopefully, so he can see an interesting fight. But Rousey's been making the rounds. She was on the cover of the ESPN, the magazine's body issue. She was on the back cover of UFC magazine. She appeared on the Conan O'Brien show. She guest hosted on TMZ Live. And she even had her own Showtime All Access special for the last fight with Kaufman. So definitely getting out there and getting her name a lot of good publicity. So more power to her. We'll see what happens with this Cyborg Santos fight, if it ever happens. There's a crazy story that kind of was off the radar last week. You remember Rito DiCaro, right, Tony?
Of course.
He's associated now with the Malta Boxing Commission. And so Rio is having a lot of difficulty with I guess he relieved the president, Alex Zammit, of his position as president of the Malta Boxing Commission. And so there's been some back and forth banter between these two guys, but I was really more fascinated with the backstory, because I don't know how this escaped me, but apparently at one point this president was in worse trouble than this, and there was some kind of scandal where him and a friend apparently were alleged to have taken out a hit on somebody that they were opposed to. And it was I think it was related to the commission. If I'm not, there we go, here it is. The limited, the Malta Boxing Commission was registered this year at Mr. Zammit's request, and with my reserve, this is from Rio himself, and with my reserved agreement to provide stability for the Malta Boxing Commission, following Mr. Zammit receiving several threats of legal action, as well as the possible fallout from the previously mentioned police investigation. I guess he had mentioned it earlier. Just find that part before I mention that. Where is it? But apparently there was a murder plot involved, which is kind of weird. You know, we're talking about Malta here. It's not like a huge jurisdiction known for that kind of bigger, I guess. But apparently, you know, the president Zammit, he owns the website that's associated with this Malta Boxing Commission, and he wrote back last week that it was Rio who had been fired. But now, you know, Rio is in. He has copies of all the correspondence between himself and Mr. Zammit, and he's responding publicly to say that Zammit's claims are nothing but an attempt to discredit him. And apparently this is all over a meeting that was held to make appointments to senior positions and issue licenses. And Rio himself and other senior Malta Boxing Commission officials were not informed of this meeting, so they fired the president. here's the story for the bad boys of boxing. Another story, I guess. Former professional boxer and his wife were indicted Friday on charges that they conspired to spend money meant for an anti-gang youth boxing center, and they spent the money on personal goods, entertainment, and other services. Keely E. Thompson Jr. was the executive director of the District Boxing and Youth Center, and his wife, Bianca Thompson, was the center's deputy director, and they were charged in a 31-count indictment by a federal grand jury. And Thompson is a well-known D.C. boxer who fought professionally as a lightweight in the late 80s and 90s, and he established his nonprofit center to provide at-risk children and teenagers with physical fitness and development programs at locations in Northwest and Northeast Washington. And get this, between 2004 and 2010, the center received more than $1.5 million in D.C. government revenue. But as you said, the Thompson spent hundreds of thousands of dollars of that money on personal items and expenses. spent more than $100,000 on gambling at Bally's Casino in Atlantic City, on board a cruise ship, on expensive cars, and on other personal items. And they were also accused of issuing themselves over $100,000 in checks from the center's bank account. And they basically diverted tax money intended for at-risk kids to finance their own luxury lifestyle, said U.S. Attorney Ronald C. Macon. Money meant to teach D.C. youth about discipline and physical fitness, which allegedly gambled away in Atlantic City and on a cruise ship, while other funds allegedly went to lease expensive cars, furnish the Thompsons' home, and even rent a Ferris wheel for a party at the Thompsons' house. We remain committed to aggressively prosecuting those who attempt to exploit for their own personal enrichment programs intended to benefit our city's youth. And Thompson was arrested by FBI agents in 2010 on a wire fraud charge. According to court records filed in September, Thompson expressed an interest in negotiating a plea, but later changed his mind, leading to Friday's indictment. So I guess he was trying to work out a plea for 2 years? That's kind of crazy that they let that go that long without indicting him. But arrested him 2 years ago, 2010. So that's our Scumbag of the Week award goes to the Thompsons.
Yeah, and I get the feeling with all those counts, when the feds, you know, with the feds, it's a whole different level than most state authorities. When the feds are involved in it, when they indict you, they're rounding third and coming home to score. So it looks like he's going to get some time.
And when another former guest of ours is in the news, Edwin Rodriguez was nearly bumped into a whole new tax bracket. And on Friday, he almost got the shot of a lifetime here. And the opportunity that was dangled in front of him briefly was a non-title bout against Kazakhstan-born Gennady Golovkin, who's 24-0 with 21 knockouts. And the middleweight build is one of the best-kept secrets in boxing. It would have been an HBO main event at Madison Square Garden on January 19th. And Rodriguez's share of the purse would have been $500,000. With another $250,000 or so in training expenses. But Golovkin's people, especially their promoter, K2 Promotions, which is run by Vladimir and Vitaly Klitschko, have settled instead on fighting Rodriguez DeBella's promotion's stablemate, Thomas Ustian. Ustiusen. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that one right, but he's from South Africa. He's 20-0-1 with 13 knocks as a super middleweight. And Larry Army, who is the manager for Rodriguez, says that he isn't totally out of the picture, but it looks like the reality is that that Rodriguez will end up fighting another top 10 foe in the televised co-feature of that card on January 19th, but it won't be Golovkin. But it could still happen. We'll see. But that's good news for another guy who has children with developmental disability there. Always like to see him do good and continue his career and help those kids out. But Edwin Rodriguez will be on that card, but probably won't be the main event. But that would have been a real good test for him. Anyway. Here's another bad boy boxing from overseas this time. Boxing legend Alex Arthur has been caught using a blue handicapped badge to park in a disabled bay while he goes to the gym. former world champ, this guy, 34 years old, was spotted parking his black Mercedes M-Class in the car park of Edinburgh University's gym. And the star, I don't know what this means, but he's apparently been awarded an MBE from the Queen. Maybe that's the badge. No, it's his dad's badge, it says, which gives him free parking until November 2014. But Alex Arthur Sr. was nowhere to be seen. Arthur drove the car into the parking lot of the Center for Sport and Exercise alone last week and steered straight into the single disabled spot. Of course, you know, you got a gym. Only have one disabled spot, right? Anyway, dressed in blue tracksuit bottoms, boxing boots, and a hooded top. He jumped out of the Mercedes and ML-270, grabbed the bag from his trunk, and ran up the stairs to go inside. Just over an hour later, he emerged from the gym with another able-bodied friend. Both men ran to the car to shelter from the rain. And they sent a reporter to approach him, and Arthur insisted he did nothing wrong. He said, my dad is disabled, which is why I have it. He's inside of the sauna. I was dropping him off. I'm just taking my pal home, then I'm coming home, coming back to pick him up. But that's the only reason I'm parked here. Do you want me to go inside and get him? So they caught him red-handed after being tipped off when his distinctive car was spotted on nearby Roxburgh Street on a yellow line with the blue badge on display on October 25th. And he got nabbed. A statement on Edinburgh University's website says they are committed to ensuring disabled staff and students can participate fully in the mainstream of university life. The gym has an access ramp at its front door with lifts and ramps inside. The website also offers assistance for disabled users if required. And 2 weeks ago, there was a counselor from Glasgow. He's 58 years old, and he parked his Mercedes in a disabled bay using a badge that wasn't his, and he's been suspended from the Labour Party until next year. So there you have it there. Even the politicians get busted for that kind of stuff, so this guy ought to get fined or something.
Sounds like we got a trend going on here, huh?
So don't abuse your... Yeah. You know, it's just like it's just too weird, too funny. Guy's going. Not only is he going to the gym to work out using a handicap badge, but he's like in one of the most physically demanding sports on earth.
and one of the world champions. Yeah, and too lazy to walk across the parking lot. Unbelievable.
Yeah, ridiculous, but that's our bad boy boxing corner there. And I think that's about it for my stacked up news here. You guys got anything else to add before we call it a night?
I don't.
Tom?
I think we've covered about it all. Yep.
So, then, thanks for stopping by, everybody. We have to thank our sponsors, of course. Cocaine Energy Drink, drinkcocaine.com. We got ZionShop.com. Check them out. And I know, actually, we've got to do another Ringo contest one of these days because...
yes, we can.
I actually have... gotten a couple emails in recent weeks, but I haven't really been plugging it. I don't even know who won the last one. I have to send her an award. She hasn't reminded me. So the girls that are in this one aren't even following it, it looks like. So we definitely got to do something.
As a grand prize, you ought to award her today with me.
All right, I will. I have that. We'll see what happens. All right, so next week. Thanks for stopping by, everybody.
Okay, guys. Enjoy the fights this weekend.
Will do.
All right.
Adios.